like the thing to do to get on out of there at that time. I think perhaps the difficulties that we had and the action I had to take may actually have been a blessing in disguise in one way, because it showed when we had to that a man can take over control of the various systems, operate manually, still know what he's doing, not have any ill effects in this regard from zero-G, and probably if sufficient study of our records from this flight warrants it, we probably can go on some future flights with considerably less automation and less complexity, we hope, as a result of some of the things that we learned on this flight. We certainly hope so anyway, but before we make any big decisions along that line, of course, we want to review a lot of the data much more thoroughly than we have so far. These things are all step-by-step items. Al, of course, added to our knowledge a large amount on his flight. Gus added more. I added a little more, I guess, on this one. And there will be many more to come. Deke Slayton, of course, is up next. And we're looking forward to that flight with just as eager anticipation for him as I look forward to this one for me. I think we've really hardly scratched the surface. We have a lot of attention focused on this right now, but our efforts really haven't gotten us very far into space, if you think about it. If you think of the diameter of the Earth being represented at some 100 miles to the inch, this would mean that the Earth's diameter could be represented by 80 inches approximately, which would only be about 10 inches higher than I am. If I held my hand up over my head, this would be of the order of 80 inches if I were standing up. Our orbital altitude, if that was the surface of the Earth, and I was the diameter line of the Earth, our orbital altitude would be about 1 1/3 inches above that, 80 inches. So perhaps if you think of the enormity of space, it makes our efforts seem a tad puny at this time. But these are all step-by-step functions we go through. As we said, all the manned flights we've had to date have added information. This flight, I hope, added a little bit more, and there are more to come. We were interested, of course, in some of the reactions from abroad with regard to the flight. I think it's well to note in this regard that as far back as 1958, the president at that time, President Eisenhower, of course, proposed that we make joint efforts with other people in regards to our exploration of space, and these were largely ignored at the time. President Kennedy, shortly after his inauguration, or during his inauguration, in his address, I believe, reiterated this again, the desire for the peaceful exploration of space and peaceful cooperation in this regard. So we don't want to let this particular initiative, I don't think, be taken away from us. This has been proposed for quite some period of time by our own leaders in this country. I think I couldn't pass up any opportunity like this without rendering a great note of thanks to all the people here at the Cape and the whole Mercury network who performed so beautifully during the flight. They acted like a real bunch of pros, and it was real gratifying after all the practice we had been through with them to see everyone come through as they did during the flight. Now, this goes from the blockhouse crew. I hate to start mentioning names because we just wouldn't know where to turn it off, and I'd hate to hurt anybody's feelings by missing them, so I won't start. But the blockhouse crew and the people at the hangar that checked out all the capsule and the boosters and the work on the pad, the range, the recovery efforts of the Navy, the Air Force support we had, it was just a big across-the-board team effort. It was, as I said earlier, I think almost a cross-cut of Americana, of all people in different walks combining together on a project, and we got the results we did. It makes you proud to be associated with people like that when everyone does work together so cooperatively. I think that President Kennedy, in repeating our desire for peaceful efforts in space, stated the case very aptly and properly. I don't know what I could add to what he has said on it. Diplomacy obviously is not my particular field. But the results of this flight could possibly, I guess, have some far-reaching effect in this regard. If it contributes any way to peace from our efforts, I certainly would consider that there is no better purpose that my life or my endeavor could have contributed than that we might have a little more peaceful cooperation in the world in this area. Thank you.
Well presented, and a job well done. Great respect, rapt attention, not a word from any member of the press corps as Lieutenant Colonel John Glenn spoke, and here he is again.
I might add one thing here. One person I wanted to pay a real tribute to, who's worked long and hard and particularly close with me during this, and that's Scott Carpenter. Where is Scott? He's around here someplace. Stand up.
Scott Carpenter, of course, the backup astronaut, the man who, during the entire five-week wait, was prepared at a moment's notice to go in and take John Glenn's place in the capsule.
Nobody knows the hours that he put in for somebody else. And we saw Scott a couple of days ago perform another feat, too. He risked his own life to save another man's life while swimming out at Grand Turk the other day. That may not be generally known either. This was very impressive. When you have an aqualung on and you're down at about 80-foot depth and you're trying to give your own air to somebody else to help them out. This is almost heroic in my book. Some of the people here, I think you may have seen this morning in some of the activities. I'd like to introduce them here. Here's the real brains and the power behind our household, my wife, Annie, right here.
Mrs. Glenn, with an orchid on her suit, looking hale and hearty, smiles
daughter
to
Lynn
John.
And son Dave, right next to her. Here.
A lovely family. 15-year-old Lynn and David.
My mother and dad, who, as the president said this morning, started all this trouble a long time ago.
You'll remember President Kennedy said they were responsible for the first launch of John Glenn.
And Annie's father and mother, Dr. and Mrs. Castor. I think scattered around up here in front are the other astronauts and their wives. I think you know most of them by sight. I'm afraid it would take too much time to introduce everyone individually. Why couldn't we have everyone stand all at one time here, all the rest of the families who are here? We have quite a contingent here.
The little ones, too.
Little ones, too, everybody. Yeah. Right.
The other astronauts, Virgil Grissom, Walter Scherer, Leroy Cooper, Deke Slayton, he's the next man to go up, Malcolm Carpenter, and Alan Shepard.
John, in getting started with the question period...
This is
like
Colonel Shorty Power.
If we don't have mics out in the audience, would you please stand, identify yourself, and let us hear your question? Mr. Schutt.
Colonel Schutt of Telenews. I'd like to know, Colonel Glenn, if you'd like to make another such trip, and if you know at this time whether other trips are planned for you.
Answer to the first question, obviously, yes. The answer to the second question, no. I have no... knowledge of future flights. As I said before, this stuff is, you can become addicted to it rather rapidly.
Mr. Bergman?
Any man that flies as well as John Glenn will fly again.
I'm with you.
Mr. Bergman?
ABC Science Editor, Jules Bergman.
Based on your experience and ability to fly the capsule when the control problems develop, what changes are you going to recommend in the capsule control for Deke Slayton's flight?
Everybody hear the question?
No.
The question was, in view of the difficulties we had in our attitude control system, what changes were John going to recommend in Deke Slayton's spacecraft?
Well, was that the question that changes in the system itself, or changes in his ability, changes as a result of his ability to probably control it properly?
You're saying it more accurate than I do.
Sorry.
Changes in the control system, and also how much more you think the man can do?
Well, before we make any positive statement like that as to exact recommendations for future flights, we need to do a lot more looking into records and data and get all the tapes back from the various stations around the network. And we have several weeks' work to do just sitting down and analyzing the data. I don't think I want to get in at this time to any statements that I recommend this or that on the preliminary look that we've had at the information so far.
Mr. Finney?
John Finney, New York Times. Colonel Glenn, what do the stars and the Earth look like from up there?
Well, stars, I was a little bit surprised. I think I maybe expected to see the stars in greater quantity and greater numbers than I had seen them before. The nearest thing I could compare it to, and did compare it to during debriefing, was the, I think, if you've been out in the desert on a very clear, brilliant night when there's no moon up and the stars just seem to jump out at you, that's just about the way the stars look. We get some light reduction because of the light having to come through the window of the capsule, of course. And apparently this reduction in light may almost approximate the losses that we normally get on a very clear night through the atmosphere. So I didn't feel that I could see any greater number of stars. They were not blinking. They came through very clear and straight shining light. There was no flickering on and off. But other than that, it looked very similar to looking at the sky on a very, very clear night in the desert.
Mr. Neal?
John, there were a number of experiments you were not able to make because, of course, you were busy flying the spacecraft. Could you give us a general idea of some of those you were not able to perform this time with a reflection here as to perhaps what we might expect for deep slate drive?
Well, we wanted to make
question has to do with some of the experiments that we did not accomplish because John's attention and time and energies were devoted to controlling the spacecraft. What some of those experiments might have been, and would we do them in the future flight?
And were there very many?
Were there very many?
Right. There were several that we had wanted to look at. We had wanted to take some infrared pictures for the weather people. We wanted to take some ultraviolet pictures around on the dark side. We had some eye checks with some small instruments that we wanted to make. There were several things of this nature. I was going to eat some more. Never got around to that after our difficulties started a little bit. What else did we have?
What's your eyepiece to look at?
Yes, this yellow air glow filter that would only pass yellow light, which is of interest to some of the weather people. That's about it.
Yes, sir. Mr. Whitkin here.
Colonel Glenn, when did you know that you had a possible emergency on your hands, and how concerned were you about it?
You know, the retro rocket?
No, the heat shield problem.
The heat shield, yes. Well, that
when
was
did you first know record. About that, and how worried were you at any time?
I don't recall the exact time that I knew about it. I knew about it for some time in advance of the retro sequence. I can't pin a time to it exactly. I didn't really contest this decision from the control center because I knew that the experts we had on the ground had certainly thought this thing out much more thoroughly than I could in flight to make the recommendation that they could make. I knew that there would not be any change of this magnitude made unless it had certainly been considered from every possible angle by many, many experts on the ground, all the people that designed the system and all the other experts that were in the control center. So while it was of some concern, of course, because it was a malfunction, we never have had a capsule re-enter with a retro pack on it before. Something untried like that, you look at it with a little bit askance maybe before you try it, of course. So there was some concern about it. I think the major concern, though, was when these chunks started breaking off during re-entry and I could see them going back by the capsule. This was a period where I wasn't sure whether it was a retro pack or whether it was a damaged heat shield beginning to break up. Obviously, it was a retro pack.
Right back here, sir. Yeah. Glass.
Failed to hold the trunk.
Colonel, you mentioned several times during the course of your flight some of the things you saw on Earth while you were up there. Is there anything now that stands out in your mind as the most spectacular or most interesting thing that you saw off the surface of the Earth?
The question was regarding what were the most spectacular things I could see. Well, number one, it's all very spectacular from up there. You can see a tremendous distance. You're up above the atmosphere. You see this little horizon band of very brilliant blue colors, even on the day side. It would be difficult to pin down any one thing as being more spectacular than others. Certainly one of the most beautiful things is to be on the dark side with a full moon out and see this coming off the clouds down below and then running over and seeing a very sharp demarcation line to where the stars keep coming down below the horizon. It's interesting to note that your sunsets and the stars moving down behind the horizon occur at approximately 18 times their normal speed. And this makes for a pretty speedy sunset. It's very rapid.
You mentioned in the debriefing, made some observations about how you could see the Earth's surface, being able to tell the difference between landmass
yes.
and so on.
That was Colonel Shorty Powers asking a question of Lieutenant Colonel.
You can
Colonel
see different patterns in the ocean current, like the Gulf Stream, for instance. You can see the changing colors there. You can see on the Earth, one area that was I could observe very clearly was the area northwest of El Paso. And that's an area where there's a lot of desert with a big irrigated area that comes down a valley northwest of El Paso. And that stood out very much. You can see the squares of the irrigated areas from this distance. I wouldn't guarantee that I was seeing the smallest irrigated squares that they have, each individual patch, but the larger irrigated squares that probably had major dikes around them could see these very clearly. Patterns like that, I think you made patterns around a city where you think, well, now there's a bridge. You can see a little dot or a little spot, and you think, well, there's a bridge. I think you determine a lot of this by possibly the fact that you see a valley and a river, and you know that at a town like that, if there's a spot there, it's probably a bridge across that river, so you say, well, that's a bridge. But you can't pick out things like a bridge or a railroad trestle or anything like that with any certainty from this type of distance, of course.
Yes, sir.
Why did you identify Colonel Glenn at El Central, California, and perhaps not a larger nearby city like San Diego?
I didn't see San Diego. I saw part of Imperial Valley. I could see the Salton Sea. This was an area that was, it was sort of a gap in the clouds at that time. Once again, I could see all the irrigated district around El Centro, and I had lived in El Centro a number of years ago for a short time, so I was familiar with the area. The Salton Sea area was very, very visible. Towns over, you can see blocks of squares in towns. We had figured before we probably would be able to pick out items down to, say, 100 yards to 150 yards long. And I think this is probably was a fair estimate.
We're in the back here, sir.
This is Swedish forecasting. I think it was Dr. Willie Douglas said yesterday that after checking you out, he wouldn't mind sending his wife and his 14-year-old son on a trip if he was sure that he could get them back. Do you agree that future astronauts might need much less physical training than you and your colleagues have gotten in the last 3 years?
The question was a remark that Bill Douglas made about being... thought that in the condition I came back in, he'd have been willing to send his wife and son along. And did this mean that we probably could do with less physical conditioning in the future? Well, I'd have been very happy to have had Mary Wade and Mike along, but it was a little bit crowded. As far as lessening our physical training, I don't think so. You don't know what you might run into on future flights. We certainly would not want to make a categorical statement that because we had this one successful outing, we would never run into any more strenuous things physically than we ran into this time. And I think in at least the foreseeable future, we would want to be as prepared as we could for any contingency we would run into as we were this time.
Yes, I think it's important to indicate that Dr. Douglas qualified his statement yesterday, referring specifically to, for example, to a geologist. And he indicated that we would first select a group of geologists and then take the most physically fit from among those. Mr. Bate back here has been waving frantically.
In the future, we plan to experiment with a so-called rendezvous or docking technique in space, and it's going to be important to know how your depth perception is in space. Did you have any trouble figuring out just where the booster was when it started leaving you behind?
Now, this was quite a sight, right? It turned around, I was separated from the booster, capsule damped, started to turn around, and as it swung around, the booster was sitting there probably within 100 yards. Very visible, very clear. We talked about this during debriefing. That if I had had the capability of having a little bit of thrust to move over that direction, could I have maneuvered toward it? I think very definitely you could. I don't think this would be any problem at all from that distance. Now, the booster, because of its different velocity, assumes a little different orbit than I had, and it went slightly under me and was passing ahead of me and under in a lower orbit the last time I saw it. This was out pretty well over toward the coast of Africa, and I didn't see it again after that. Question?
Did you have any trouble catching up and meeting something fairly smoothly?
Well, you say with no reference point, we would have no trouble. I think you're always going to have a reference point of sorts. It may be stars, or it may be an artificial horizon that you have set up at a certain gyro angle, but I don't think you're... in effect, you'd be saying you couldn't rendezvous as a blind person, and this is true. I think you'll always have some reference, though. I don't think you'll be completely without reference.
Question here, sir.
Victor Cohen, Minneapolis Tribune. We know the answers aren't all in yet, but on the basis of your present judgment, where would you pin down the control problem? To the horizon scanners that reset the gyros, to the gyros, or to that reaction jet that didn't appear to...